Hey everyone, Homes.com knows having the right agent can make or break your home search. That's why they provide home shoppers with an agent directory that gives you a detailed look at each agent's experience, like the number of closed sales in a specific neighborhood, average price range, and more. It lets you easily connect with all the agents in the area you're searching so you can find the right agent with the right experience and ultimately the right home for you. Homes.com, we've done your homework.
Hey, everybody, if you want to tell the world something or sell the world something, head on over to Squarespace, because they're going to help you build the website of your dreams. Say you want to sell some custom merch. Well, you can set up your online store. Whether you sell physical, digital, or service products, Squarespace has the tools you need to start selling online. So go to squarespace.com/stuff right now, and you will face a free trial. And when you get ready to launch, use our offer code STUFF, and then you'll save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. How could you go wrong with Squarespace?
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Chuck Bryant. Welcome to the future of the internet. It's called Stuff You Should Know.
We are the past, the present, and the future, my friend.
Yeah. Choke on that, haters.
Yeah, so that's what we're talking about today, and I'm hoping you have some awesome, cool story about, the future or the internet.
You'd think I would.
No intro on this one?
No. There's a surprising dearth of stuff out there about the future of the internet.
Yeah.
I found that a lot of people are really, really nervous about putting their neck out because we finally reached a point in time where you can build a career based on successfully and accurately predicting the next move, right?
Yeah, true.
So everybody is kind of confident about what's coming 5 years from now, 7 years from now. And if we haven't, by the time this thing comes out, put it on the actual name of this episode, I'm going to go ahead and put, what is the future of the internet, parentheses, 7 years from now? Because right. That's really what it's about.
Yeah.
Unless you want to start talking transhumanism, Chuck, which I'm prepared to. I like transhumanism.
Not on this one, though.
Okay, but unless you're prepared to talk about that, it's basically like, what's it going to be like 7 years from now? And there's some pretty good guesses. Yeah. And one of the people who's not too shabby at guessing is one of our coworkers, colleagues. His name is John Strickland. And if you don't follow him on Twitter, you're missing out.
Strick of Tech Stuff.
Yeah, his Twitter handle's John Strickland, J-O-N Strickland. Obviously one word, no other, anything in between.
Well, Josh, in lieu of an interesting story from you.
That was the opposite of supportive.
No. We should totally support him. I always do. I love Strick. Even though there's a fake internet battle between us that fans like to think exists.
I know, it's funny.
In lieu of a great story then, how about I have a few stats on just the internet as it is and as it was, then we can talk about what it might be.
Okay.
How does that sound?
Yeah.
Here's a nice infographic. These all come from the Pew Research Institute, a research center for people in the press specifically.
Okay. That's us.
The Pew?
Yeah. No, the press.
Are we?
Yeah, technically. Okay. We're journalists.
Internet adoption. This is just a little infographic. In June 1995, about 14% of American adults 18 and over
adopted an internet.
Use the internet. Isn't that crazy?
What year was that?
1995.
Okay. 14%? Sounds right.
Not 1912. Not that long ago.
No, but yeah. I mean, remember that was back in the day of like Prodigy.
Yes.
And they'd have ads for Prodigy and you'd still be like, what the heck is Prodigy?
Yeah. Yeah. What was Prodigy anyway?
It was a web server,
was
web browser.
An ISP or?
Yes.
No.
Yeah.
A service provider?
Yes.
Okay. November 01, so between June 95 and November 01, it went from 14% to 60%. And today we stand at about 77%.
That's staggering to me.
77%?
Yeah, that's not higher.
78% are men, 76% are women. Pretty evenly divided. If you want to go to household income,
Wait,
what? This is interesting.
So the 150% is split pretty much evenly?
No, no, no. 78% of men use the internet.
Oh, gotcha.
Adult men. And
gotcha.
76% of women. So just 2% more of men for some reason. Household income.
I can think of the reason.
If you make 75 grand or more a year, you have a 96% chance that you use the internet.
Sure.
And I guess the other 4% are old people that don't understand it.
Yeah.
They're filthy rich.
They pick up the keyboard and try to talk into it. That's ageist. That's the next thing that's coming, you realize.
Less than $30,000 per year, surprisingly, 63% still use the internet on a daily basis.
Well, this is why they call it ubiquitous.
It is ubiquitous. And then finally, Josh, I'm going to finish up with what people do on the internet, what American adults do on the internet
okay.
on an average day.
Let's hear it.
61% send or read email.
Okay.
And then I found, period, like 85% use email. So 25% of people don't check their email on a daily basis.
That's nuts.
I know. That's
those are what they call the relaxed people.
Right.
Is a type B person.
50% use a search engine to find information. 40% get their news. 38% go online just for fun.
is that the category?
Yeah. Nice. 37% use some sort of social networking site.
Mm-hmm. 37%, that's it?
Yeah, that was November of 2010. That's probably even higher right now.
Wow.
34% check the weather. 26% bank online every day.
Yeah.
23% watch the YouTube. Mm-hmm. Or a video sharing site. And about 20% of people look for news and politics, political information, every day. So just interesting. That is the current state of the internet.
I think I do all of that except news. Or not news, weather.
A little commerce, a little news shopping,
yeah.
Communication, social networking.
Yeah.
It's all pretty basic.
It is.
When you think about it.
Compared to 1995, it's not basic.
True.
But yeah, well, that's the whole point of the internet. It's there to serve us, right?
That's right.
Like, it's supposedly all of our needs right there. And what we're seeing right now is a movement toward making accessibility easier and easier.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
So, one of the ways to make accessing the internet easier and easier, Chuck, is to, increase download speeds, or what's called the effective data transfer rate.
Yeah.
And also, I think we should put a disclaimer in here. If you've ever wanted to chew me and Chuck up alive for missing something, for screwing up something,
yeah.
for getting something just totally wrong.
All the trolls just went,
Here's your chance. If you couldn't get us on the Sun podcast or the Epigenetics podcast, here's your chance. So let us know. You can be nice about it. You don't have to be a jerk, but you can definitely correct us because we're open to that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So the effective data transfer rate, right? That's the average rate at which X number of bits transfers from one place to another in some block of time.
AKA how fast your junk runs. You know?
Right.
That's what we're talking about. When I click on this thing, how fast is it going to load this movie?
Right, and that's funny because movies are pretty much the go-to standard
sure.
of how fast something goes, right?
Yeah.
So Strickland wrote this, and his first prediction for the future of the internet is that it's speed. Speeds are going to be increased tremendously.
Really went out on a limb there.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, if you go and look, if you do a search for future of the internet, you're not going to find anything different than this. It's crazy. Like, no one's sticking their neck out at all.
No one knows.
But he said that according to Akamai Technologies, which puts out a state of the internet report on a quarterly basis, the average global data transmission speed in late 2009, which might as well be 1995, was 1.7 megabits per second. Megabytes per second.
I could not find the current one.
I couldn't either.
One reason why is because if you look up stuff like this, all you're going to find is AT&T says it's this fast. Verizon says you can get it this fast. And it's people advertising how fast they can do it.
Right. Or
it's hard to get an average.
It's some obscure website about, you know, like what a 4G network should be.
Yeah.
Or somebody broke a record. And in fact, there's a record that he mentions from Bell Labs, right? From
This is the current record, as far as I know.
Yes.
Although it could have been from yesterday, and now it's outdated.
This one is pretty recent. I believe it was May, maybe? I'm not sure. But it was 100 petabytes. Okay?
What's a petabyte, Josh?
A petabyte, Chuck, is 1 million gigabytes. So that's 100 million gigabytes in a second that they transferred.
Or 100 billion megabits.
Okay.
That's just another way to say it.
Or, I guess, 1 trillion bits, right?
I bet our math is wrong somewhere.
So, and then, of course, that's in a second. So they managed to transfer 100 million gigabytes of information in a second. And what does that mean in DVDs, which are like the Big Macs of the Internet, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it turns out that they transferred 22 million DVDs worth of information in a second.
Right.
Now, this is using a laser.
Well, yeah. And I need to point out, I did go to the Akamai Technology site, which publishes this quarterly report, and it sat there as a PDF. And I was like, oh, great. Q4 2010.
Right.
Or Q1 2011. I was like, perfect. Click. You must be a member to access this information.
Oh, gotcha.
So the point is, though, is not that we know the average transfer rate worldwide. The point is what we're getting and what is potentially possible, is there's a huge gap there between what you can get commercially.
Right, and while that transfer of 100 petabytes was across a laser, which no one's using right now in a commercial network.
Not yet, yeah, sure.
There's the record for fiber optic, which is in wide use, that's your broadband, it was 26 terabytes, which is, I think, 1,000 gigabytes.
That's fast.
Yeah. So 26,000 gigabytes in a second.
So that's still
on broadband.
Huge gap between what is available to us. So the whole point of this is, this is where we can potentially end up, is you can download a movie to watch, an HD movie in a second.
Right.
Just by clicking on it.
What makes me sad is that we're not already at like a petabyte of information transferred already.
Yeah, I wonder what all the reasons are.
I don't, like on our local area network here at the office, it says like 100 megabytes a second. It's like, no, that's what I could be getting, but it's never what you get.
Right.
And I just think it's the internet's fast, but it could be faster.
Agreed.
That's point one.
All right.
And the prediction is it probably will be.
Wirelessly and landline based.
Right. And wireless is going to get faster and faster, and that's probably where people are going to start putting most of their money, if they're not already, in figuring out ways to make it faster and faster, because wireless is what everybody wants, right? If the internet is found in devices, if that's the future of it, in how it's consumed, then wireless is probably the basis of most of these devices. And not only that, Chuck, not only do consumers want it, but companies, internet service providers, want wireless to be the next internet as well, because that FCC ruling from December of 2010 on net neutrality basically said, yes, the net needs to remain neutral unless it's wireless. And they left the door open for wireless internet service providers to show favoritism. And this is the second part of the John Strickland prediction extravaganza of the future of the internet. Where the net's going to be going.
That's right. Net neutrality, Josh, is a big can of worms of which we could do an entire podcast, but we are going to only pull one worm from this and simply say, if you've heard the term net neutrality, you don't know what it is. Basically, it is keeping the internet wide open. No matter which ISP you're using, you can access the same content as someone else using another ISP. The potential against this would be, if an ISP, let's say, cuts a deal with certain vendors.
With a site, a website.
Yeah, certain websites. Doesn't have to be a vendor, but it could be.
Okay.
Then they're going to put their juice, their best juice, into making that really fast, a fast load.
Right. You would get your 100 megabytes a second download for that website.
But maybe the other website, which may be the competition of that other website, it's going to make it really slow or just not make it be available at all.
Right.
And like a cable company, you can't get our beloved Science Channel.
Which is
wrong.
Yes.
because, certain cable companies, they got a monopoly in your area, and you're like, oh, I can only go with blank cable company in my area, and they don't carry these channels.
So right, or they don't carry these websites. That's the future of
exactly.
it. Exactly. And that's a big problem because the internet was, the model of it was kind of based on all the mistakes that have been made in the past, learning from that.
Mm-hmm.
And then now, once we realize what we have at our hands, it became less neutral in December 2010.
And it's a big, big deal.
Yeah, it really is. We've seen with the Arab Spring how touchy people get when you shut down their access to the internet.
Yeah.
Revolutions occur, mm-hmm. right? So censoring the internet in any way, shape, or form is a definite no-no. But the problem with this FCC ruling is that it allows for basically financial censorship of the internet. And one of the problems with this lack of net neutrality is if you get what you pay for, then the internet will become divided across class lines.
Yeah, the biggest websites that can afford fastest download times and speeds will weed out the mom and pop, quote unquote, of the internet.
Right. And then just based on the just basic capitalist theory,
mm-hmm.
those websites aren't just going to hang out over here and hope that, you know, the net expands once again. They're going to wither on the vine and die. And we're going to have a pared down, leaner, probably more corporatized version of the internet.
Exactly. And what I think should happen, Josh, and I think a lot of people agree, is to let it be a little more Darwinian, which is what it has been, which is keep it an even playing field and just see who survives.
Right.
And if you remember when all the startups, the big boom in the 90s when,
yeah.
I mean, there were so many new commerce sites.
Yep.
And I remember thinking at the time, you know, the Amazons will survive and all the other ones or a lot of the other ones will die off.
But did you think WebVan was going to make it?
I had a director I worked for that bought a lot of stock in WebVan.
Yeah, I have a friend who did.
It didn't work out so well. And I'm not laughing. It's not funny. I feel very bad for people who put a lot of money into a startup
yeah.
and failed.
But
that's my point is it was a level playing ground at least. It's whoever does it the best will win out. And the Amazons won out.
Yeah.
The YouTubes won out.
Did you put your money where your mouth was and, like, invest in the Yahoos?
Dude, do you think I had any money in 1995? Do you think I have any money in 2011?
If you had money in 95, you would have it in 2011, I imagine. Unless you hung on to that Yahoo stock.
Right.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
One of the ways that that net neutrality, I guess, is threatened is a lot of companies that make devices weren't waiting around to see how the FCC ultimately ruled or whether the net would remain neutral.
Right.
They started making what are called walled gardens, right? So the devices, I should say, by the way, they're called tethered appliances.
It's what are we talking about?
An iPad. Language.
Okay.
It's an iPhone.
And tablet.
It's a Droid.
A smartphone.
But let me, Apple's just such a great example of this. I'm going to pick on Apple, but it's not just Apple doing this.
Sure.
Like, the Xbox. Xbox Live. Mm-hmm. You can't access Xbox Live through any other device than the Xbox. That makes the Xbox a tethered appliance. You have to have that to do that.
Yes.
Okay? So, with the iPad or the iPhone, mm-hmm. That's a tethered appliance. You use that to access what's called a walled garden, right?
That sounds pretty.
It does. The iPhone, it's supposed to be. It's
right.
A very nice, pleasant, like, user-friendly, very design-heavy corner of the internet. It's part of the internet, but you can't get to it through traditional means.
Right.
You have to get to it through this device that you buy from this company, and they own this section of the internet.
Mm-hmm.
The iPhone App Store is a part of the internet that Apple owns that you can't get to any other way. So there's this one way to get in there. And as, you can't get to the iPhone App Store through your Droid.
Right.
Right?
But
so
you go to the Droid Marketplace and it's got a lot of the same
You apps. Can, but let's say 90% of the market share for handheld mobile devices went to Apple. And Droid had 10%, but you can't survive with 10%.
Right.
And eventually, it's going to be Apple that creates the user experience of the internet.
In your hand, yeah.
That ubiquitous design, I'm sorry to use that word twice, but that design that's just so emblematic of Apple,
mm-hmm.
that is so many people's experience of the internet.
Yeah, you're experiencing the internet through Apple's core.
Exactly. Nice, Chuck. But the Android has completely different designs, a completely different experience.
Yeah.
And if you ever put an Android user and an iPhone user into the same room, they are barely talking about the same thing.
Yeah.
Even though what they're talking about are handheld devices that access the internet.
Yeah.
Supposedly the same internet.
And then, all right, think about this. You've got, let's say, a less popular handheld device these days.
The Sony.
Like
the Carnivale.
Like the Palm, let's say.
The Carnivale.
People are designing apps for the Droid, and the companies are designing apps for the Droid and the iPhone like crazy because those are the two biggest ones.
Right.
And they want to get it all over the place. You feel maybe bad for other handheld devices that don't have people saying, oh man, I want to design a Carnivale app.
Right.
So Carnivale users can have that same rich experience. Carnivale doesn't have the money. I mean, I'm sure they're trying to get in that marketplace and design their own cool apps. But the apps are coming from, howstuffworks.com.
Right.
And what do we do apps for? We did apps for the Droid and for the iPhone so far.
We haven't done a Carnivale app.
We have not done one, and poor Carnivale is going to suffer one day. Because essentially they're being left in the dust, and the internet experience is being lived through two handheld devices.
Two. And eventually there could possibly be one.
Or it could expand and the BlackBerry, or I'm sorry, the Strawberry could catch up and revolutionize things and get way more apps than the iPhone. Who knows?
It's true.
But it
still follows that same model. I mean, ask Adobe. They make Flash, and everybody loved Flash. It revolutionized how we consume material on the internet, right? Apple chose not to operate Flash on its OS, on its mobile OS.
Mm-hmm.
So any site that has Flash, you just have that little cube, the little Rubik's Cube.
Yeah.
And that's it. And Apple's not the least bit apologetic of it. And the crazy thing is Apple users aren't demanding Flash. Flash is just going the way of the dinosaur because Apple chose not to support it. And now everybody's like, there's whole HTML5 developer movements out there where this is the next thing that's going to replace Flash because Apple chose not to support Flash.
Right.
That was it.
That's the
internet being carved down by people who are making decisions for everybody else.
How are we doing on this? We good?
I think we're okay. I think one of the ways we're getting away with this in large part is that we are, this is opinion.
Well, and I know, I feel like I'm in a lake with like the water just under my nose because dealing with this tech stuff is such Strickland's line of work and he feels so comfortable with it. And, I just have, and with techies especially, it's not like we're talking about, you know, bear spray and like five people know that we're in over our heads.
Right.
Techies really pay attention. They're going to be like, these guys are so wrong.
I know. And again, if we are wrong, please do correct
us. Start a discussion. We like that.
Yeah. But Chuck, I feel like I'm bleeding from under my fingernails from just hanging on. That's two. Number two is that the internet will be a leaner, slicker, more corporatized version of itself now.
Perhaps.
Possibly. Mm-hmm. There's a book I ran across. I haven't read it. I just came across it today. It's by a guy named Jonathan Zittrain. Zittrain.
Mm-hmm.
It's called The Future of the Internet and How to Stop It. That's where I got the tethered appliances thing.
Gotcha.
And he's basically like, we need more like user-generated stuff and less walled gardens. And if we don't have them, if we don't do something now, then we're toast. Because there's so much cash to be made out there on the internet that it's going to be a big fight either way, even if there is success in creating a more democratic internet.
Right.
Or maintaining it, I guess.
So that's some of the tech stuff.
What's the third one? Oh, yeah. We know this one.
Yeah, Nicholas Carr. We've talked about this. This guy wrote a book. An article called Is Google Making Us Stupid? That got a lot of press. We've used it in presentations. We've used it in podcasts. And the hypothesis is that the way you navigate and read things on the internet is not like book learning and book reading.
It's not deep vertical absorption.
Right.
It's horizontal.
And it's spottier, right?
Vapid absorption.
And it's basically his argument that just because we have this library of information doesn't mean that we're using it to make us smarter.
Well, he was saying that it's so revolutionized how we learn by the access we have to information that it's changing our brains. We're being cognitively restructured.
I believe that to a certain degree.
Oh, I do too, man. My attention has decreased spectacularly over the last 4 years since I've worked here.
Well, and then I did a Stuff from the Future podcast this week. It's one of our video podcasts.
Is it out?
It is out.
Awesome. Tell them everybody about it real quick.
Stuff from the Future. It's a podcast where someone just muses on something for about 5 minutes on what it might be like.
Okay.
Mine was personal communication, and my point that I was making is that people are not communicating the same way since the advent of the smartphone. They're not even talking on the phone as much. Because of texting, they're not talking face to face. And what does that mean 100 years down the road? Are people going to be freaked out having when someone drops by their house and knocks on the door, or when someone?
I'm already close to that point.
Or when somebody has a personal eye to eye confrontation with you.
I'm right there, buddy. I'm the future. You're looking at it.
So I argue that all you see nowadays are the tops of people's heads instead of eyes. All you see is people looking down all the time, everywhere.
Yeah.
And that we're not flexing. We can't remember anything. We don't have the opportunity to remember something we used to know and flexing those deep memory muscles because you can hardly get the word out who was that someone before someone has looked it up and told you who it was.
Cato Kaelin.
So there's no more tip of the tongue experiences. There's no more deep memory, but we're flexing different parts of our brain, like how to use my thumbs to type.
Right.
So I think making us stupider.
So that's your summation?
Well, I mean, it's certainly changing things, and I don't know if it's for the better. I mean, we have immediacy of information, but
the way Strickland took it was that Carr was saying, like, we're taking our need to keep this information. And I know he made this point in this article.
Uh-huh.
But, like, we had to know the right answer to something before, we had to know it. And now we don't have to know it because we have a repository that anybody can access through their phone now to go get the answer. So it's like a giant collective brain that we're coming to rely on.
Exactly. But what happens when that brain malfunctions or that brain is being fed certain information?
That's false.
That's false or that's, you know, I'm not saying it's going to be like 1984.
Or
but
dumbed down.
Net neutrality, if the government gets more involved and all of a sudden, I mean, look at what's already going on in China. They're being fed specific information.
Right.
And that could one day be our truth in reality.
Damn, that was heavy.
It's dystopian.
Yeah. With my concern about it, it's kind of closer to yours, but it's more that, like, my brain is literally being restructured.
Yeah.
Physically through plasticity. That instead of being able to absorb something deeply, I'm just getting the bits of information I need out of something very quickly. And then, you know, when that brings up another question, I just open a new tab, search for that question, start putting stuff together. So I'm able to connect seemingly disparate ideas into a third hybrid idea.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I'm not necessarily getting it. That, you know, when something clicks,
mm-hmm.
it's things don't click anymore.
But those are such beautiful moments.
When they do click?
The tip of the tongue moments when you finally think of that thing, it's such a rewarding experience, and that's going away to a large degree.
Yeah, when things just clicking when you know it, is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's not, what you're saying isn't clicking.
No, what I'm saying is, like, the tip of the tongue moment, like when you can't think of something, like, oh, what was it? What was it? And when you finally think of it two hours later,
yeah.
It's so great.
Yeah.
But that can't happen anymore because some dummy won't even give you the chance to think of it.
It says here it was Jackie Chan.
We actually at Max FunCon at the after party in Hodgman's room, there's about 12 folks hanging out, and he'd said, this is a Google-free evening. He said, no one touch your phone.
Yeah.
Leave it in your pocket. And we spent 3 hours talking, and many things came up that people were like, oh, what was that? What was that? And it was like
no one like drowned or
no,
anything.
It was like the old days 6 years ago when you would have these awesome conversations and not be able to think of something
yeah.
and be like, oh man. And then the next day you would see one of those people and say, dude, I thought of what that was. And, I don't know. I think the smartphones are ruining things in a lot of ways.
Yeah. There's a lot of problems.
They're not connecting people. Like they're kind of putting up walls in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
As they also connect. It's a conundrum.
I read something once. I think we should end on this. There's a rule of thumb out there that, it's basically etiquette of when you can use your phone in a social situation where I feel like if you follow it, you can still be a normal person. But if you wouldn't pull out a crossword puzzle and start doing it
right.
in a social situation, you shouldn't pull out your phone.
Right.
It's pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, I like that.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on!
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Yeah. You got anything else?
Yeah, I'm going to just go over a few of these. Sarah Kessler at Mashable wrote a cool thing. 6 web pioneers on what the internet of the future will look like.
Chuck found 5 satisfactory.
And so we'll just briefly go over a couple of these. Barry Glick, founder of MapQuest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Glickster. He says, kind of what we were talking about earlier. He said, right now the internet has been very computer oriented, and that's the association. You need a computer to connect. He said that's going away, of course, already. But basically, he sees the future of there being no boundaries. The internet is just this invisible present power supply, and all you will have is access devices.
Yeah.
There will be no more television. There will be no more telephone. You will just have these devices.
Everything crammed into one.
Yeah, that tap into the brain of the earth. Interesting.
You came up with the brain of the earth thing, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you want to read any of these? Or?
Yeah, I liked Jeremy Stoppelman, who is the CEO of Yelp, and he talked about augmented reality, which kind of dovetails with his business.
Very well. Because he plugged one of his applications.
Well, there's an app for Atlanta I read about recently where it's like you hold up your phone, this map feature pops up like augmented reality on all the stuff that's showing up on your phone of the area around you. Like, here's this restaurant special today, or this is a great place to go dancing if that's your kind of thing. But I don't think the augmented reality says that part. But it's... I mean, it's already here. That's I think, extremely interesting to me that it's like this. Do you remember those, the human body and like the, little celluloid?
Yeah, you could peel back.
Right. And it was like the skin, and then you peel back the skin, and there's like all the muscles. You peel that back. There's the organs and the nerves and all that. It's kind of like laying one of those over real life. I just think that's really cool.
I think if you peel back the final one of those books, it just should have your face. Like right around the abdomen.
But it's dead. It's like rotting.
That's horrifying, actually. Ryan Ozimek, president of Open Source Matter, sees more and more focus on the cloud.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah.
It's, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, these guys aren't exactly going out on a limb. Dries Baitert, the founder of Drupal. Thinks more websites within a single organization, more different devices that need to consume those websites with different experiences and more social things.
Yeah.
So basically more of what's going on is what he thinks.
Exactly. More of the same.
Interesting.
So I guess I want to say if anybody wants to tell us what we got wrong, that's fine.
Or speculate on what you think the future is.
We'd love to hear you stick your neck out, so send us an email. We'll give you the email address when we're finished. But if you want to learn more about the future of the internet, type in future internet in the search bar at howstuffworks.com, and that brings up what, Chuck?
Facebook Ask Josh and Chuck feature. And we call it something different every time.
All right.
We did this, if these are running concurrently, on the previous show, where we post on Facebook, ask us whatever. We'll buzz through as many as we can. Some are funny. Some are serious, and we will treat them thusly.
We'll treat them all funny.
Alex Embry, do you guys prepare what you say together or by yourselves before you record? Alex, we've answered this before, but for new listeners, we do not prepare. We do not go over stuff. We try to just prepare separately and have a conversation.
Yeah.
And record it. Pretty simple.
That is it.
That's the mojo.
I got one. Have we ever met Jad and Robert from Radiolab? No.
I have not, but Robert Lamb of Stuff to Blow Your Mind has interviewed him, one of the guys on the phone.
Yeah, he's a big fan of theirs.
Yeah.
I am too.
They're great.
He's a huge fan. What you got, Chuck?
What music are you listening to right now? Attending any concerts this summer?
I'm hopefully going to attend Huey Lewis.
That's right. I'm listening to the new Bon Iver. It's good. New My Morning Jacket. New PJ Harvey. Tyler, the Creator. Have you heard this kid?
No, is he a rapper?
Yeah.
Is he good?
He's a part of that group, Odd Future Will Destroy the Earth or something like that. There's these like 19-year-old kids out of L.A., and it's just crazy talent.
I'll check it out.
It's really good. And it's very creepy, too. Like, kids shouldn't go listen to this stuff.
No?
Yeah, they sing about some pretty awful stuff.
Lots of snakes?
Yeah.
I'm listening to Herb Alpert and Chuck Mangione today. That's what I've been listening to.
I am going to see Dylan in a couple of weeks.
Are you?
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Fred Dylan.
Matt Dylan.
Matt Dylan. My Morning Jacket with Nico Case. Going to see them in a month or so.
Oh, that's a good mashup.
Yeah, good twosome.
Yeah.
So that's all I have on the concert schedule. Tapes and Tapes, actually, in a few months, too.
Yeah.
And Steve Mountains, he's coming, too.
And you saw, who did I see? I saw Dinosaur Jr. recently.
Oh, yeah. How's that?
It was good.
They I told you I saw Jay Mascis at the airport.
Yeah.
He was not looking good.
He was probably looking exactly the same as when I saw him.
A little haggard.
Yeah. Still, it's a good show.
All right.
Loud. There, I said it. It was loud.
That's what you can say about Dinosaur Jr.
Let's see. What's my drink of choice? Chuck, what's your drink of choice?
I like a good gin and tonic or a good bourbon on the rocks.
You on the gin and tonic right now?
Yeah.
I'm on this one called Guadalajara Sour. It's awesome.
Really?
I make a modified version of it that I'm not going to give the secret away.
Okay.
From, but it's good stuff.
Lately, I've been by Decatur has a craft beer store called Ale Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that.
And they have they sell growlers. So you buy your growler for like $5, and then you just go up there, and they have like 8 beers on tap, and you can fill it up for.
Can
like
you
six
ride off
bucks.
With it on your bike?
Sure.
There's a little market by Dad's Garage. That has like a wine island, and it's like
really?
They sell it by the measured amount.
Huh.
And that you go get a little prepaid card, and you slap your card in there, and you stand in the middle of this market and drink your wine.
Wow.
And start laughing at people after a couple of glasses.
That's right next to Emily's shop. I'm going to have to check that out.
No, not in Decatur. It's Dad's Garage.
Oh, okay. I was thinking Push.
Yeah, in Inman Park.
Yes. Brian T-Bone Perkins, Donald Duck versus Daffy Duck.
T-Bone Perkins?
T-Bone Perkins, yeah, Brian T-Bone Perkins. Donald Duck or Daffy Duck?
Oh, yeah.
He says in a sing-off, but I'm just going to say, in general, easy Daffy Duck.
Like, that's who you'd rather hear?
Dude, no question. I was Looney Tunes all the way. I was not a Disney kid.
I like Donald Duck. I heard when I was a kid that he was banned from, like, Sweden or something like that for not wearing pants.
No, we heard that in the podcast.
I heard it a long time ago.
Oh, but the lady confirmed it in the podcast.
Okay.
Was it Sweden? She sent us a comic. I think it was Sweden.
Yeah, that's right. She did send the comic.
Yeah.
What was that, like 2 years ago?
Uh-huh. It was a long time ago.
You got any more? You want to do one more each?
Yeah, one more each. Go ahead.
Let's see. How is Nick Cage an Academy Award winner? Because of Raising Arizona.
Well, that's not what he won for, though.
It doesn't matter.
He won because Leaving Las Vegas, he was awesome in that.
He's good.
And the competition that year was pretty weak.
That's a depressing movie.
Richard Dreyfuss in Mr. Holland's Opus was that year. Anthony Hopkins as Nixon. Massimo Troisi in Il Postino.
I thought that guy won.
No. You're thinking of Roberto Benigni.
No, I know. No. But Il Postino was like the just the
it
darling of
foreign
the
film, yeah.
Okay.
And then the other, actually, Sean Penn and Dead Man Walking, that was his only real competition.
He didn't win?
No, he should have that.
Wow.
Although Nick Cage was great.
Yeah.
All right, my last one. Ever want to do the show without wearing pants? And my, that is Cody Heineman. And Cody, my answer is, what do you mean? How about with wearing pants? Hey-o!
Nice, Chuck. I think you answered for both of us on that one.
Yeah, Kelly Cronley asked about Nick Cage, by the way.
We yeah, I'm sorry about that. Here. I haven't been saying people's names, have I?
I don't know.
I haven't. Sarah Cresilius asked what our drink of choice was.
Okay.
Well, if you want to ask us questions, go on to Facebook for once in your life. Why don't you? That's facebook.com/stuffyoushouldknow. And you can also tweet to us at SYSK Podcast. And you can send us email. Remember, if you have a prediction for the future of the internet, we want to hear it, right? We'll pass it along to all these so-called experts. You can send us email at stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join HowStuffWorks staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Are you thirsty? Well, Richard's rainwater is caught clean before it even hits the ground. Rain is naturally pure, so there's no need for harsh chemicals or additives. Richard's rainwater contains no chlorine, no forever chemicals, No microplastics, no nothing. Enjoy the smooth, clean taste of still rainwater or the cold pressured bubbles of sparkling rainwater. Just visit RichardsRainwater.com to find a retailer near you. That's RichardsRainwater.com. And for a coupon, text STUFF to 251-292-8887 and receive $2 off a 12-pack case of Richards Rainwater.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.